Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before we turn our attention to Paul's opening salvo and his first letter, that's to the Galatians, we have Don having called back in from Idaho, so I'd like to entertain what Don has to say. Welcome.
Yada. Shalom.
Yes. Yeah, shalom.
Three subjects, and they're all related.
Okay.
To, and I'm going to need help with this now because it's a very, very sensitive subject that needs clarification, and I may not be able to express it as well as you can. Kurt's phone call yesterday tags in with some of the messages that we have shared on our little network up here in Northwest United States. And it is your loved ones.
Right.
And what can we do?
Yes.
Now, what I'm going to say may not be understood.
Can I interrupt you a moment so that for those who are listening today that didn't hear the conversation with Kirk and the last hour of the program yesterday, let me just restate his issue. He said that he was talking with multiple individuals who were frustrated that once they had become members of the covenant family, when they came to embrace the Torah and came to know Yahweh, that they were that there was discord between them and their loved ones who were still clinging to religion. And so Kirk and I talked about our various situations and the people that I know at large, as well as Yosha's own interactions with folks, and basically our conclusion yesterday, and you may have a different one, and if you do, that's fine, was that Yosha himself, Yahweh himself, was never tried to convince anyone to accept him. He told us where to look if we wanted to come to know him, but he never engaged a religious person in debate for the purpose of winning them over to his position. And if he didn't, then we probably ought not either. But that we should be prepared when our loved ones want to know why we have embraced the covenant. We should be familiar enough with the Torah and the prophets and Yahweh and his covenant to express why we have chosen to participate. That was the gist of that call yesterday. Did I summarize it reasonably accurately from your perspective, Don?
Pure diamonds. Pure diamonds.
Okay.
And that is what I have tried to convey with my ineptness, that there is nothing we can do. Yahshua made no effort to, as you say, convert or bring in. He left us with beautiful, beautiful information on where to go to find this information. But we have to read it carefully, Yada.
Yes.
If you get the King James out and read it, you're going to be wandering in a weed field. There's very little grain that's available in the King James without good understanding. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'd say that the King James is not a lot worse than the New American Standard. It's not much worse than the any of the English translations, including the most recent English translations. I'd say the NIV is you could throw into the same group that the translations really aren't translations. They're religious copy edits and paraphrases at best, and they're full of errors. I mean, they're, you know, when a Christian holds up their Bible and says this is the inerrant word of God, no, it isn't the Word of God. It is. It's hugely corrupted. So I would say that. The only thing I would say that would be a little bit counter to what you said, Don, is that even with the horrible translations, if you compare what they say in the Torah with what Paul wrote, they're irreconcilable. So even with the horrible translations, you can figure out that Paul lied just by taking what the translations say in the Torah versus what Paul wrote. But for the most part, I would agree with you. It's tough unless you're serious about actually looking at the words in Hebrew, which we have wonderful tools to do so. If you're not serious about getting to know him through his Torah, chances are you won't.
Yes, and my webpage is a resource page filled with tools that you and I have learned to use, most of which are free.
Correct.
There are a couple that are moderately expensive, but digging into...
Let me add something here to this. Neither you nor I are selling anything, because all we're doing is trying to expose people to what Yahweh himself said. And since Yahweh didn't charge us for his Torah and prophets, we most certainly aren't going to charge any others. What you're speaking of is there are some, if someone does not want to use free online resources for Hebrew lexicons and Hebrew interlinears, that there are tools that they can buy at fairly modest prices that will enable them to do it more efficiently than they can if they use the free online tools. But it's not something you and I are selling. The only other change I would make to what you said is, the old terminology was that I have a web page. Well, you don't really have a web page. What you have is very, very broad, very deep website that presents enormous reservoir of insights into Yahweh's Torah, his prophets, his Psalms, presents it not only in HTML and PDF, but also in audio recordings, so people can listen to what God had to say, even when they're not in a position where they can read what he has to say.
Yes. And I totally agree. That was a gift. That was a gift to me.
Yes.
I didn't realize the beauty and the marvelousness of that gift until I was into it for well over a year, Yada. Yeah. It struck me out of Daniel and Psalms, and I think most of all, the book called Exodus, that I was adopted. I'm not saved.
Yeah.
I'm not saved, and I can't save anyone else.
Yeah. Let me just interrupt you again, and I want you to go on. When we talk about you being slow to come to this realization, you're a pretty tough guy. You spent a lot of your life as a U.S. Marine, and you've bowed your back more than once or twice in your life. I would classify you as a pretty tough nut. That you're a tough guy, stubborn. Wouldn't you agree?
A little cracked.
we're all a little warped. That's what makes us fun. But wouldn't you agree that you're amongst the average people on the street, you're a lot less wishy-washy, a lot less prone to just go with the flow than the average guy.
Now, I got my basic training at boot camp in San Diego, and it was in the 1950, 51, 52, 53 era.
And, yeah, so you began boot camp before I was born.
I told you that a number of times.
Yeah, every time I talk about my faults, you say that you have faults older than I have been alive. The second thing that I wanted to emphasize here, so we're not talking to a guy that's wishy-washy. You're not a real spiritual feel-good sort of a guy. Your whole life has been tough as nails. You've always had a backbone. The second part of it is that there is a perhaps, and I have so many, you know, things that I think are the most profound, but I would say that amongst the most profound realizations of the Torah, of Yahweh, of the covenant, is that, and it's such a departure from religion, is that God's purpose is not, God's purpose is not to save us. Our salvation is a byproduct of the covenant, and it is, on the scale of things that we benefit from the covenant, our salvation is small among gargantuanly beneficial things, and that the primary purpose of the Torah is to serve as an invitation of an announcement of God, Yahweh's willingness to adopt us into his family.
Yes, that's the word I want to use, and it's very difficult to explain that to your loved ones that you want to, and I'm going to use this word in quote, save.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's natural. That I would be disappointed if that wasn't. But
there's a
hard rock here, and that is you have to take care of yourself first. Then I have to take care of my buddies, and my buddies will take care of me. And if you let the mother, we call Frank and I call it mother, Ruach Kodesh.
Yeah, the set apart spirit.
Set apart spirit to step in, and there's the power that we do not have. We have the initiation, and if someone loves me, as you understand my background, we don't go there. you can love them, and they say they love you. However, you have to stop right there. If you go to introductiontogod.com and study that, you will find an incredible introduction to the greatest father you've ever had, and the greatest gift he has given you is the Word.
Yeah, and Don, we're going to return after this commercial break. Please stay with us. This is the most important conversation that we can possibly have. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with one of my very favorite people. Lots of things I like about Don. A man's man, tough as nails. Lots of genuine enthusiasm. But also, I think maybe it'd even help, and we've mentioned this before, there was a significant period of time where you didn't like me very much.
Yeah, that's mild. That's mild.
Yeah, yeah. And that was really because we came to know each other initially because of your enthusiasm for the Dead Sea Scrolls. You felt, and correctly so, that that getting an older manuscript of what God had to tell us than the Masoretic text, which the Masoretic text was primarily used for English translations and was not used for the King James. The King James is a translation out of the Latin. Was dated to about the 16th or 17th century. And the oldest credible version now is the Codex Linogratus. It was written in the around 1100 CE, so in the 12th century. But it didn't even become published until about sometime late in the 19th century. And what we found is when we were able to compare what the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Qumran scrolls, reveal, like in a book like the Great Isaiah Scroll, where you have the entirety of a book from the Dead Sea Scroll collection, dating to about 250 BCE, so 13, 14 centuries older than the oldest Masoretic text, that on average about one in 13 words has been changed. And that's before you look at the vocalization errors. That's just copy it. It's just changing the text to pseudo-rabbinical Judaism. And so you had an enthusiasm. You wanted to know, because the time you were a Seventh-day Adventist, you wanted to know initially, was the Seventh-day Adventist position verified or was it contradicted by the oldest sources of what God, who's Yahweh, and in the Dead Sea Scrolls, we learn that Yahweh revealed his name 7,000 times in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, exactly 7,000. You want to find out what he actually had to say. And that's how we initially met, correct?
Yes, yes, very, very much so. And we were on a good path for quite a few years back and forth with email. And then you started the blog talk, and that was really a very, very learning part of time until you and I bumped in into that book called Galatians.
Yep. Let me give our listeners a little background here. On the Blog Talk Radio presentation of Yada Yah, which is what I began 5-6 years ago, the purpose of it was to give listeners insights into how the translations were formed and then more insights in terms of how they can take what God said and apply it to their own lives. So you could read the books and all the information was there for you, but the Blog Talk Radio presentations and those archives, I think, are all available on your site and also bless you. Well, your site is yhwh-qra.com. yhwh-qra.com is that you could go there and get kind of a full analysis of what each word meant, how the word came to be rendered that way, what the root's history, the active verbal root of the word was, how the text differed if from the Masoretic versus the Dead Sea Scrolls. And so it was really an in-depth evaluation of Yahweh's testimony. And then, as you know, someone who was taking advantage of that, who was using that material positively, I don't mean taking advantage in a negative way, I mean in a positive way, down in New Zealand wrote me a letter and said that the Christian community there is saying that Paul in Galatians nullified the Torah, that he said that the Torah was incapable of saving, and that the Torah was obsolete based upon Paul's letter to the Galatians. Yeah. And so I took up the challenge to say, well, is that really true? If we look at the oldest manuscripts of Paul's letters and we analyze what he actually wrote and we compare what he said to what Yahweh said in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, was Paul inspired by God? Did he tell the truth, or was he a liar? That was the basis of questioning Paul, correct? And the review of Galatians, which was his first letter. And we'll be back with Don after the break. But what we discovered, the irrefutable truth, is that Paul was a false prophet, a false apostle, a complete and utter liar. And that doesn't sit well with a lot of folks, including Don initially. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. We're having a conversation with Don. Don, once you were willing to consider questioning Paul and read through it, didn't you come out eventually saying, you know, this is so much better. Now I don't have to worry about a new covenant contradicting an old covenant and wondering which I should trust. Now I know that God only has one covenant, and the conditions to participate haven't changed and the benefits haven't changed. And I can trust the God that conceived the one and only covenant. Was that the net result of finally discarding Paul?
No, I was mad.
Okay. Okay.
I was angry.
Yeah.
Mostly
so was I.
At me.
Oh, yeah, yes. So was I. Yeah, so was I.
Yes.
I wasn't mad at you. I was mad at me. Yeah.
Yeah, I agreed with you after I fought and fought, mm-hmm. and then realized I had been reading this and I had been studying this, but until I understood that I was also reading it with, as Frank says, those primrose glasses,
yes,
that I was angry.
Yeah.
But yes, the rest of it is true. Of what I came out with was coming back to you and saying, what a fool. Now then, can we go on?
Yeah, and by the way, you weren't coming back to me. You were coming back to Yahweh.
Oh.
And of course that was the case. But I want to emphasize this point. As I came to recognize that Paul's words are completely irreconcilable with God's testimony, and that any informed and rational evaluation of Galatians vis-a-vis the Torah of Yahweh renders Paul a complete and utter liar. Probably the most disastrous human being who ever lived.
Yes.
The first response that both of us had, and I think that many of us have in this regard, is anger at ourselves. I was just so mad at myself. I was so disappointed in myself for being fooled by such a thinly guised lie. You know, I'd always thought, you know, I'm a pretty well-read, pretty disciplined, pretty logical guy. That's about all I've got going for me. And yet this guy pulled the wool over my eyes, and it was so obvious he was lying that I was mad at myself for being played a fool. Is that similar to your response?
Yes, yes. In fact, I turned around and dug another foxhole, and I started taking your work, your words that you originally started and revised, I think, 5 times. I'm pretty sure that what I have in the website is your 2012, end of 2012, and that's when I started transcribing your words into audio, and I came to like it so much I decided, well, this is Greek, and I'm interested in old manuscripts. So it is posted on the website. I won't use mine anymore. In MP3.
Yeah. The
MP3.
Yeah, at the YHWH-QRA.com website, you can listen in MP3 to Questioning Paul. And the reason there were 5 additions to Questioning Paul is that it's twofold. One is the more I learned, the more I had to correct what I had written that wasn't entirely correct. You know, for example, I went into Questioning Paul in the first pass, believing, as Paul had said, that there was a renewed covenant and that the New Testament was just inappropriately mislabeled. It was really the renewed covenant. And I very soon, after the first draft, realized, wait a minute, there is no such thing as a renewed covenant. The covenant hasn't been renewed yet. It will be renewed, but it hasn't been renewed thus far, so I can't use that term. And you just go on and on, and you, as you learn, you have a choice. You can either be, once you learn something, you can continue to promote a deception, or you can change what you've written and admit that, you know, I made a mistake, let me correct this. And then the other issue was that someone sent me a reference to Habakkuk, which is a minor prophet, where they said that someone had inferred there might be a veiled reference to Paul that Yahweh had made in Habakkuk. So I translated the first 3 chapters of Habakkuk, and I found out that Yahweh called out Paul by name, by reputation, by mission, by personality, and said that he was the plague of death. And that no one who is associated with Paul or believes Paul will be satisfied. And then once you find out that God himself, 666 years before Paul wrote his first letter, told us, and he called him out by name, he called him Shaul, which is his given name. is the plague of death. At that point, you can't be coy. At that point, I can't say, you know, the first few chapters will give Paul the benefit of the doubt and will only hammer him when it becomes impossible to give him the benefit of the doubt. At that point, I just had to rewrite the whole thing and say, you know, I'm going to take God's perspective on this. The man is the plague of death. He is the most lethal human being who has ever lived. And let's just come out with guns blazing. And if you're a religious Christian, you can't read it because you don't like what God has to say, then, you know, I'm not going to make any apologies for you. So that's why there are five editions. But let's get back to, so once you come to that position, then all you really have to consider is what Yahweh himself has to say. And he opens his Torah testimony talking about his covenant, doesn't he?
Oh, yes. And on that, if you go back and you read the greatest story ever told, by the way, it was made into a movie, which was somewhat there, but not as good as it is in, and by the way, we do have that in the Dead Sea Scrolls.
We do have that in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Yeah, and we've got many copies of Bereshit, which has been renamed Genesis, where the covenant is presented. So it's the first book of the Torah, and everything you need to know about the covenant is presented in the first book of the Torah in Genesis, which is actually Bereshit, which means in the beginning.
And those people, Yehudim, well, yeah, I guess you'd have to call them Yehudim. Mm-hmm. They came out after 400 years.
Yep.
You know how many generations that is?
Yeah, 440 years all total, but 400 years of that in slavery. 40 of that,
yes,
they were honored guests. And so, you know, the average generation is at that time from birth to conception of the next generation was about 20 years, so five generations per 100 years. So you're looking at 24, 23 generations.
Generations. I figured 25, 20 to 25.
Correct. That's
now.
One of the reasons that your number would be more accurate than the one that I gave with the average of 20 years is that much of that time, 400 years, that they were slaves, and as slaves, they didn't live very long, and so, you know, and particularly the men, so most of the men were killed very young because they didn't want a rebellion. So, yeah, it's probably 25 generations.
Well, our generation today is much the same as they were. Do you realize that we have not had any good Torah readings since 330, 335 CE? You and I were trained, professionally trained. And boy, those primrose glasses, they're not primrose anymore. I mean, they're dark black.
Yeah, we were told not only to ignore the Torah, but to discard it, to associate the Torah with the Jewish law and the Jewish religion, when Torah doesn't mean law and it has nothing to do with religion. What the Torah is guidance that we can follow so that we come to understand, because it's teaching, Yahweh's invitation to be part of his family. And that's really what the Torah is.
Now, when Moshe got them to the mountain, and they heard the words, they saw the fire, they saw the smoke, they ate the food that was given to them, their clothing was provided for them. What was the first thing they did? They built an idol.
Right, a golden calf, which was the Taurus the bull with a sun disc between its horns, gleaming at the color of the sun, because the bull was always a guise for the pagan gods of the Egyptians and the Babylonians. That's what they built.
Now, Yahweh wanted to destroy them.
Correct.
He wanted to get rid of them.
Moshe had
to run up and negotiate with him.
Yeah.
So he kind of compromised a little bit, and a large part of him died there mountain.
We're killed.
Well, we're in the same boat. Our generation today, we have the same thing. We're building golden altars, church steeples, and when you bump into Galatians and Paul, that's a real battlefront.
Yes, it is.
That's a bloodbath.
Yeah, the battlefront of Paul in American society is the ultimate battleground.
And if you're dyed in that, you're going to have some kind of will within yourself to, which I think I had, to go and find, and I fought you for 3 months. And after I realized that I couldn't win, I hate to admit it, I surrendered.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is, of course, you weren't fighting me at all. You were fighting a juxtaposition of Yahweh's testimony against Paul's testimony, and you realize that if you side with Paul against God, then you're in a really bad place, and that's what Christians have to do. Most of them do it unwittingly, ignorantly. But ultimately, if you side with Paul, if you believe Paul, then you have to be opposed to God. And that's a real uncomfortable position for someone that wants to have a relationship with God. Welcome back to the concluding segment of Shattering Mist for today. We're having a conversation with Don. Don, would I be correct in assuming that the greatest joy, the greatest enjoyment that you came to realize from embracing Yahweh and his covenant is that the creator of the universe loves you, wants to adopt you, in fact has adopted you into his family, and now you are his responsibility, that it's his job to make you immortal, it's his job to perfect you, which takes some doing, I know you. It's his job to enrich you, to teach you, to empower you, to clothe you, to feed you. You are his responsibility, and what you get out of it is all of the enjoyment and the rights of being God's kid, adopted into his family, inheriting everything that he has to offer, which happens to be the entire universe. Pretty good deal.
Well, it's the greatest deal in the universe. And to make that even worse, it's free.
Yeah, can you imagine turning that down?
Yes. Yes, as long as you have Frank's glasses on.
Those rose-colored glasses.
He calls it the bunny. The bunny glasses.
The Easter glasses.
No, you can't step out of that. It is impossible. And that's why I mentioned to you when we spoke once before, that first step, Yara, that's the biggest one of the bunch.
Yes, it is.
If you go into step three, step four, or any of the others, none of those are like that first step, because that first step brings me back to why I called, and Kurt really rattled my cage, because we're dealing with that with a number of people up here who are trying to take that first step, but they still got one foot on their marriage license, one foot on their children, one foot in their cousins, some of them even just one foot into dear friends. Richard and his wife and I are working on some transcriptions for a blind person. And Richard's wife is really interested in this. And I don't know anything about this person, but when you hit the nail on the head. It's not our responsibility. It's his.
It's his. And we do have some responsibilities as part of his family. we should continue to avail ourselves of his Torah teaching so that we come to know him and understand who he is and what he's offering. So we're prepared to help people who also want to be part of his family. But it's not our job to convince them. That's the job of his word and his spirit.
And William proposed on our network last week that he's concerned about preparation for those that are left behind. And boy, that's a subject. That's a subject I don't even want to start tackling.
How do we leave a written legacy and an audio legacy that introduces them to why they were left behind and how they can avoid being left the 7 years thereafter? So yeah, you're correct. And one of the greatest parts of all of this, Don, is that once you're part of Yahweh's family, you completely relax. His responsibility. We don't.
Oh yes.
We're nothing really is expected of us other than we spend time with him and we listen to what he has to say and we think about it so that he wants us to make a contribution to the relationship because relationships are meaningless unless both parties participate. But we're not responsible for saving our loved ones, our wives, husbands, friends. That's Yahweh's business, and it's secondary to him. The primary business to him is to introduce himself to them and to invite them to participate in his covenant family.
Yes, and the only way you're going to get that is read the word.
Yep. You've got to want to know him, and you've got to want to have a relationship with him sufficiently that you're willing to invest the time to study what he had to say. And you're never going to find him if you're going to start with the Christian New Testament. That will lead you in the wrong direction. You can only find him if you begin where he began, in the book of Bereshith, Genesis, the first book of the Torah. That is the only way to know Yahweh and to be adopted into his family. Don, thank you. Let's do this again and often.